From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, is HARP shutting down? Nick Baggage joins us to talk about that very strange story. Here's what's happening. We went into Afghanistan in October of 2001. Now President Barack Obama is seeking to keep 9,800 U.S. troops in Afghanistan after the U.S. ends its combat mission in the country, supposedly at the end of the year. The U.S. plan calls for troop levels to be reduced from its current force of 32,000 by the end of 2014. The remaining U.S. military presence would train Afghan forces and support counterterrorism operations. We may never leave. A U.S. single-family home prices rising in March, beating expectations. Prices in the 20 top cities rose 12.4% over a year, topping expectations. Let's check in with the expert and investment advisor, Catherine Austin Fitz. Well, this was a friendly little surprise, Catherine.
Well, but George, you know, it's been running, home price rises have been running at about 12%. And, of course, in the strong areas, I'm out in San Francisco today, it's 20% here. So in the areas where the economy is good, the housing sales have been good. And certainly in the upper end of the market, at the upper end of the market is strong. So it's a divergent market, but overall 12%, yeah, it's good. Now, remember, that's in the top 20 cities.
That's right. I keep hearing rumors, though, we could have another housing bust. What do you think?
I think it's unlikely. I think a bust is unlikely. Right. If you look at the latest Gallup polls, the favorite investment right now of Americans is real estate, running 30%. Yeah. Compared to gold at the stock market at 24%. I think a lot of people in America see real estate as a reasonable investment, and you've got big investors sitting on top of inventories that they'd like to IPO or securitize. So I think the pressure politically is going to be on to inflate the housing market, if anything.
What's new at Solaria.com?
Well, George, I'm out in San Francisco. There's a lot coming. We're launching a new blog in a month, and
good,
we're excited about it, so stay tuned.
You got it. You keep in touch with us on that. Catherine Austin Fitz, a 19-year-old from the state of Washington, held his breath on U.S. 26, entered a tunnel, causing a three-vehicle crash, four injuries. Police have cited now the 19-year-old who held his breath while driving. He fainted, causing this three-vehicle crash, injuring the four people. Unbelievable. In the aviation mystery that has baffled the world, there is one fundamental question continuing to swirl. Has Inmarsat got its numbers right? It was these very calculations which led for the search of MH370 far from the plane's original route across Southeast Asia and deep into the southern Indian Ocean off the west coast of Australia. No piece of work is more important than the search of the plane. And while all communications were cut off to the plane, there was still satellite communications that kept saying hello to the plane for about 6 hours. Jim Sanders, who's been with us since this bizarre story unfolded in March, author of The Downing of TWA Flight 800. Jim, you know what? They're still not any closer. They have no idea what's going on.
That seems to be the verdict out there. If in fact, there had been a straightforward investigation up to the point that data became available. And then let's remember that data has never been used before. It hasn't even, there hasn't been an experience level where you even know if it's halfway accurate. But if it had been a reasonable investigation up to that point, they'd say, well, maybe. But it from the start, it has been something that has been manipulated, obviously been manipulated by the hidden hand out there somewhere. So I don't think we can believe any of it.
Would you be surprised if one day, this plane appears out of nowhere and something horrible happens?
No, I wouldn't. But from this point forward, you're in the serious use it or lose it if some bad guys actually took it. And so I would say if from this point forward something bad happens with it, the initial that you must consider is that it's another one of these phony things to get some kind of war started or something started. I mean, we haven't had a legitimate war since probably the Civil War, from the War of 1898 forward, and I've done a lot of research on this for a manuscript I'm doing, the reasons that we thought we went to war are bogus.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're coming up on 13 years in Afghanistan, Jim.
Right.
13 years.
Right. And there's this obscure book out there by a man who was involved with the intelligence community, had a lot of credibility, and you could only find it briefly online. He was part of the Taliban operation to try to turn over bin Laden. Mm. And the CIA wouldn't let him. They didn't want him turned over until they'd gone to war. It's quite a book. I can't remember it off the top of my head, and I can't find it anymore online.
They probably took it off the market.
Well, he testified in his before the Senate Select Committee, or before the Joint Select Committee, and his testimony's never been released.
Jim Sanders, thank you again for staying on top of this story for us. Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, contains errors in 9 out of 10 of its health entries and should be treated with caution. According to a new study, scientists in the United States compared the entries about conditions such as heart disease, lung cancer, depression, diabetes with peer-reviewed medical research, and they said most of the articles in Wikipedia contain many, many errors. You know, in 5 years, will we really start to wonder what happened to America? In 10 years, our kids don't know what America will be like. And in 25 years, well, we won't even recognize America at all. All of this put into police state. Cheryl Chumley joins us in a moment. We talk about this on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Police State U.S. Day. Cheryl Chumley with this professional journalist, more than 15 years of experience covering just a wide range of topics from politics, policy, presidential elections to small town courts, cops, county government as well. She's a court-appointed special advocate. She helps judges make the difficult decision of where abused and neglected children should ultimately live. And her book we will talk about for the next couple hours here on Coast to Coast, Police State USA, How Orwell's Nightmare is Becoming Our Reality. Cheryl, welcome to the program, first of all.
Hey, George. So nice to be here. Thank you.
I've heard some great things about you from Joe Farah.
Well, I hope they're all true then.
They are. And by the way, thank you for doing what you do for the neglected and abused children. That is not an easy task at all. My gosh, that's got to be heart-wrenching sometimes.
Yeah, CASA cases are the worst of the worst. They only call CASAs into the job when there's some real abuse taking place.
Truly unbelievable what goes on in this country with little kids, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's heartbreaking.
Police State USA, tell me about how you got into this.
Well, I've spent so many years reporting and seeing government operations up front, close and personal, from the local level, like you said, all the way up to the state and federal level. And I watch news, I stay informed, and I notice just through the years you pay attention to the news, and it doesn't matter who's in office, a Republican or Democrat, you know, it always comes out the same in the end. And I started looking at the deeper roots, and I think there's a real battle in our country going on, and in my view, the biggest issue is that Americans are losing sight of our greatest American asset, the belief that our rights come from God, not government. And if we don't, grab hold of those and hold fast and turn back the tide in this country and keep that principle from leaving our next generation's minds, we're going to lose sight of what our country was based upon.
Is it my impression, Cheryl, that this whittling of our rights is happening faster and faster and faster?
Yeah, you're not off base on that at all. I spent months researching this book, and I just have 100 or more cases of just various instances where, you can point a finger and say, hey, that's more like a police state than American Republic. It's just crazy, and it's not just the police. It's the private sector. It's the government. It's homeowners associations. It's everywhere you look, businesses. It's coming faster and faster. You're right in saying that.
And I first thought it started with these checkpoints that, police departments would set up in municipalities, and then these red light cameras that they'd use to try to capture you to see if you were going through a red light or something like that. And in some cities, they were programmed the yellow light was programmed too short, so it nails you right away. You start to go through, and they've got you. I thought maybe that was the beginning of it, but I have since thought, Cheryl, that it probably started even before that.
You know, I happen to think that the mind shift in this nation started back in the progressive era, when we started looking toward government more for solutions that are better left and that our founding fathers intended to be left in the hands of the private sector or the American family. But it's certainly, if you want to point to a certain period in time, September 11th, the terrorist attacks on our nation's soil, that definitely ratcheted up some of these security issues. It's all for the name of safety and security that a lot of these civil rights infractions are committed.
You've dedicated an entire chapter to these civil forfeitures. And tell me a little bit about that. And why should people simply say, hey, you know what? I care about this.
Civil forfeitures, there's some crazy stuff going on there. Let me start by giving an example of how this
sure.
works. A Maryland man, he was driving with his wife and their 16-month-old son, along with an employee of his restaurant, down to a southern area state to buy some new equipment for the business. In his vehicle, he carried $50,291 in cash. The reason being is because in his trade, he gets better discounts if he pays in cash.
That's
I don't
right.
think that's uncommon for a lot of businesses. So he's nearing the town, the small town in Texas of Tenaha. It's about an hour away from Shreveport, Louisiana, and they were pulled over. The road he was pulled over on was a well-known drug trafficking area.
Oh,
the police officer pulled out a drug-sniffing dog and had them wait while he sent his dog around the car. The dog didn't spotlight on anything, but the officer told the passengers, the Maryland passengers, that because he had the drug-sniffing dog, that served as a warrant. So now he was allowed to search their car. He did. He searched their car. He found the cash. He confiscated the cash, their cell phones, an iPod, their car, put them in jail, no charges yet, and took their 16-month-old child and put him in custody of Child Protective Services.
Unbelievable.
Never charged with anything, but because it was a well-known drug trafficking area, he was allowed to do this based on civil forfeiture laws. To fast forward through it, they released him the next day. All three of them gave the child back. Let them go. No charges filed. It took them 2 months of court fighting to get back their cash. But in the end, again, no charges filed. And the reason this is allowed to go on is because we have a program called Civil Forfeitures through the U.S. Marshals Service and the Department of Justice, where in cases where drug crimes are suspected or other crimes are suspected, police are allowed to confiscate cash, cars, properties, whatever they think may be used during the commission of a crime. And you're put in that position of having to prove your innocence in court to get back that property.
So all they have to do is just simply suspect you. They don't even have to charge you, and they can do all these things to you?
Simply suspect. And I should say that Maryland man was one of about 1,000 cases that went through Tenaha on that exact portion of roadway in a 2 or 3 year period of time. I know this because the ACLU stepped in and filed a lawsuit and found that the police down there were abusing the civil forfeiture laws.
Would we have seen this happen, Cheryl, prior to 9/11?
That's a hard call to make on civil forfeitures. I think civil forfeitures have been rising in abuse in line with the reduction in cash flows to state and local governments. There's a real incentive for local governments and state governments to utilize the civil forfeiture laws and partner with the federal government because they get a cut of the money. And we're talking some big money. You know, they'll confiscate boats and cars. They confiscate, in one instance, $75 million in cash in New York. And that's not an uncommon amount. And that money is split between the federal, state, and localities that participate in the civil forfeiture. So as money dwindles, as tax revenues fall, you know, there's a real incentive to continue these.
Sure, they need to get creative, don't they?
Yeah, they need their money.
And I will say, Cheryl, many, many police officers listen to our program. They work at night. They're listening to the radio in between calls or when they're just on the side of the road. And I will say this categorically, because I know many police officers, most of the police officers that are out there in this country putting their lives on the line are dedicated, hardworking police officers who truly care about individuals, and they're great people. There's a handful out there, like in any bad apple basket, that abuse the power, the privilege, and you know, those are the ones that you got to be careful. Be that as it may, the police state wasn't just the fault of the police officers. This was basically a mandate from government, wasn't it?
Yes, this is the federal government's program. It was implemented as a means of combating drug crimes, but it started morphing into something more. Instead of, there's three different types of forfeitures. There's criminal, where you have to actually charge the person in order to confiscate their property, but then there's civil and administrative, and those are for lesser crimes, and they don't need to come with any type of charge, warrant, court order. The police can just take it on themselves to confiscate when they feel that a crime is being committed or about to be committed.
George Orwell's 1984 was just a little before its time. If he were around today, Cheryl, what would he be doing? Cringing? Panicking?
I'm sure he'd be saying, "I told you so." I mean, it seems to be coming true.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. I mean, he was way ahead of his time. You touch on a lot of things in Police State USA, but you do not touch the Second Amendment. How come?
I don't go into the Second Amendment, first off, because most Americans' awareness is pretty raised on that issue. Second off, you know, it deserves a book of itself, which there have been books written about it. It's just an issue that I think most Americans are well aware of, and they're deep in the fight on that. I tried to point to things that people maybe don't think about as feeding into this whole police state atmosphere that we're creating in America.
Would you say that we are indeed in the police state now, or we're headed that way?
You know, I'd say we're pretty much in it. You know, we need to do some fancy footwork and turn things around. I think if people read my book and they see all these different examples, and then, you know, if you have any doubt, I notate everything. You can check my sources. If you have any doubts, look into it yourself, and you'll probably be shocked at what's been going on in communities around the nation. And these aren't few and far between instances. These are happening every day, flip on the local news type of, you know, fast-breaking, moving target type stories.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Edward Snowden, of course, the whistleblower. Some people think he's a hero. Other people think he's a traitor. His attorney talking yesterday saying that he may want to come back into the country. Maybe they're going to negotiate something. What do you think of him?
Well, I definitely think he's a coward. And the reason I say that is because his mantra was that he was trying to do something for the betterment of, you know, to release information that could help people understand how far government has gone. And if you're claiming that you're doing something for somebody's good, then in my view, it holds a lot more weight if you stand around, even if you know that you're going to face prosecution. You don't run out of the country and hide out in Russia. As far as him being a patriot versus a traitor, I can't make a call on that. What I can say is that so far in what I've seen, and I'm certainly not an expert in this area, I haven't tracked everything like Glenn Greenwald has, but what I've seen come out, I don't see anything that's come out that's been so damaging to our nation that we're facing a dramatic security risk. I see a lot of things that come out that may be an embarrassment to the White House and to President Obama, but a lot of the stuff that's come out, to me, it's been common sense. Yeah, we spy on, you know, foreign governments. And also, I never really thought it was a shocker for the government spying on American citizens.
Well, that's true, too. You got Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas to write the foreword of your book. How'd that happen?
I asked him. And, you You know what? That bears well on how a congressman views his role. When they're willing to take a request from somebody that they've never even met. Now, I've interviewed him a couple of times, but I've never met him. When they're willing to field a request like that, to me, that's what public service is supposed to be. You're not supposed to base your, you know, I'll return phone calls or answer emails based on who wrote me them and how important they are. So, to me, it was quite an honor for Congressman Gohmert to write my foreword. I'm very happy that he did, and he's actually one of the few heroes left, the true patriots left in Congress.
Cheryl, we're going to talk more about Police State USA. Perhaps you can give us a couple more examples like you did of that poor family. And then next hour, we will take phone calls with you. Cheryl Chumbly, our guest, Police State USA on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Cheryl Chumbly, with us. We're talking about her work, Police State USA. Cheryl, any more examples of what's happening across this country in this police state?
Tons of examples. There was a guy out in Henderson, Nevada, just recently, within the last year or two. He was sitting in his home with his wife. His phone rings. The police, he picks up the phone. The police want to use his phone as a lookout point for his neighbor's house where there was a domestic violence call. They want to conduct a little surveillance inside this guy's home. He says no. Why should he? It's his home. He doesn't want the police in there. They didn't like the answer no, so a few minutes later, five officers show up at his front door, banging on the door, demanding to be let in. He wouldn't let them in, so they took a metal ram and battered down his front door, forced their way in. They ordered him on the floor. They told him, sit down, lay down, come over here. They shot him with pepper spray. They shot his dog with pepper spray. Meanwhile, his wife left the house. To make a long story short, what happened was they finally arrested him on obstruction charges because he was in the way of their surveillance investigation, which, once again, was ongoing in his own house, and they were doing it absent his permission. So they put him in jail overnight. He had no charges against him that held up in court. He turned around and sued not just for the Fourth Amendment violation, but also the Third Amendment, which is unusual because that's the one that says you can't quarter soldiers in your home during peace times. So, you know, that's a case that just happened fairly recently, and yet another example of how police, I agree with you. Most police are good, but when the ones that are bad or get out of control, they certainly shock the national headlines.
Right. Especially when they have the endorsement of government behind them.
Yeah, that's the worst. And you've probably heard about that DNA testing that went on down in Texas where police were pulling people over on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And bringing them to the side of the road and asking them to provide DNA, even paid in some circumstances for a cheek swab or a blood sample. They said it was voluntary, but what an intimidation factor. Turns out it was simply a partnership with the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration to do a long-term research project on DUI drivers. This is something that's been going on for four decades in our nation at more than 60 communities around the nation. The Fort Worth officer in charge of that finally apologized and pulled his officers. But as I said, this is going on all around our nation for the last 40 years.
That's crazy. When you look at what's going on, what's the reason behind it? What's happening? Why are they afraid of this?
Again, my basic premise is that we're losing sight of the fact that we are a nation where our rights come from God, not government. That's being flipped. So the more people believe our rights and freedoms come from government and they're granted at the whim of government, the more you're going to see encroachments like this. There's no way around it because government, when they have control, they need to keep that control. And the way they keep it is to clamp down.
And they clamp down indeed, too. That is frightening. Now, you've also talked about the rise of militarized police in small towns all over the country. Now, when you talk about militarized police, I have, you know, I have visions of police officers, you know, wearing, heavy armor and things like that. What do you mean by militarized police?
by police officers wearing heavy armor and things like that. That is going around in communities around the nation. And the reason why is the Pentagon put out this program, I don't know how many years ago, I want to say at least 10 years ago, where you could purchase surplus military equipment for your local police forces at a steep discount. Sometimes they even gave it away for free. They stopped doing that program for a little while because of rifles and weapons. They were being lost and abused in local police departments. They were being unaccounted for, so they stopped that. But they still give out and distribute to local police departments gear that's worn on the battlefields in Iraq and Afghanistan. You see police departments now with Humvees riding around in helicopters, wearing Kevlars and full body armor, and sometimes it's just to serve warrants. There was a case in 2011 where this ex-Marine, this former Marine, was in his house with his wife and his four-year-old son, and all of a sudden a SWAT team came swarming into his home. He thought that it was an intruder, so he hid his wife and child in a closet and reached for his rifle. The SWAT team just saw him standing there with a rifle and shot him dead in a hail of bullets. And when I say hail, 60 to 70 bullets were found in his body. Turns out the SWAT team was acting on an erroneous tip, sending them to the wrong house. But this is what happens when you have police just jumping the gun a bit and moving more into military mindset, where it's attack first, interrogate second, and away from the police mindset, where it's supposed to be protect and serve the civilian sector.
But it also tells you, Cheryl, how police are so uptight because of the fears of just so many things that are out there these days, where it's almost now shoot first, ask questions later. Very unfortunate. Man, if I was ever in a situation where, you know, a policeman pulls a gun on you, my hands are going up, and I'll do whatever he says just so he doesn't start shooting, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, that is the proper response. But, you know, for the worst-case scenario of what can happen when, you know, Americans have really ratcheted up their fear, you only have to look at the Boston Marathon bombings and what took place in Watertown as they searched for the two terrorist suspects.
Yeah.
You know, you saw videos. The police were just yanking people out of their homes at gunpoint. You know, they were questioning people in the streets, handcuffing them and so forth without charges. A lot of people would say that was a cause that demanded action like that. But at the same time, I cite that in my book as an example of what a police state really looks like if citizens get that fearful.
Well, it's a panic police state, because I think officers, those in law enforcement, and some of them I trust would call us next hour when we open up the phones, that they will panic because of this situation. Things get out of control. You know, we saw what happened with Hurricane Katrina years ago. There was just no way FEMA, government, Louisiana, anybody could do anything to help people. It was totally chaos, out of control, looting, everything else. I think, Cheryl, and this is a sad part about all of this with police state, that when the worst happens, they can't handle it. And there's going to be a disaster of biblical proportions just from the chaos.
Well, I would agree with you. And again, if you look at what happened in Watertown, that was probably an example of what could happen, you know, on more biblical proportions if
yes.
Something more chaotic happened around the nation. You know, police are people too, and, you know, a lot of them are just out trying to do their jobs, and they're the ones in the front lines, not to use military terms when we're talking about the militarization of police, but they're the ones in the heart of, you know, facing gunfire, facing terrorists, facing all kinds of risks that the average American can't even fathom. So you have to give them a lot of respect. But my point is, there are cases where abuse occurs, and in those cases sometimes justice is not done. It's not done at all, or it's not done speedily enough, and that's something that Americans should be wary of, watchful for, and educated of.
I think so too. You touch a little bit on drones in Police State USA. That there's a technology, I think, that's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and help terrorists, crooks, you name it, do some things. I had a guest on last week, and we were talking about nanotechnology, and he's convinced that we will have in the not too distant future, the ability to send like a little insect, robotic bot with some kind of like ricin poison or something, and literally fly into some government official and assassinate people. He's convinced that's going to happen.
Well, we do have the technology for a drone the size of a bumblebee. They haven't figured out how to keep it powered long enough so it can do long-range flights or anything like that, or do long-term surveillance or anything even remotely tied to some type of ricin attack or something. But I believe too, drones are going to become commonplace. Amazon, the private sector, I believe, is going to drive a lot of that push. I think it was Amazon that just came out and said a couple weeks ago that they plan to have 10,000 drones in their warehouse before the end of 2015 or something like that. I think there's a lot of private sector interest in this, drones to deliver pizza. And I think, if you do it that way, that people will become more accustomed to it and more welcoming of it than if it comes in through the government sector or the police department sector.
Gosh, I'm happy with UPS. What are they trying to do to us, huh? You have talked about fusion centers, which are centers that are set up to get information on terrorists and things like that. How many are there? How many fusion centers are there in this country? And is there a serious tone to that?
Yes. To answer your second question first, there's about 72, roughly, give or take a few, fusion centers at state and local levels around the nation. And these are operated by local state law enforcement, but they partner with the federal government. And what they were intended to do was help fight terrorism. That's what they were set up for under the Homeland Security and so forth. But in 2012, the Senate issued this report that found these fusion centers only give the shoddiest of information. It's rarely timely. And more often than not, it endangers citizens' privacies. So that's something that, when the Senate's issuing that, and in 2012, that was a Democrat-controlled Senate also, that's something that Americans should take note of. The centers have become more, instead of terrorism-fighting machines, they've become more information collection databases to fight regular crimes. I'm talking about, like, drugs, illegal cash transactions, sometimes human smuggling, but all in all, they go after more crimes than they do any type of terrorist activity.
You've looked at schools. Is there any concerns there?
My big thing with schools is what they're teaching the next generation at the same time all around the nation, all this other stuff is going on. In schools, the big deal right now is, of course, Michelle Obama's healthy eating initiative, mm-hmm. which I see as just, one big example of federal government nanny state governance run amok. The first lady, she's not even elected, but she's got this policy in place that mandates to schools and basically tells parents this is what you're going to feed your kids. So that's something that I think we're in for the long haul, because as she indicated this week, she's just doubling down on any type of Republican effort to counter that program with some, more logical reforms. The other things that are going on in school, though, is, just you can't do anything related to God in school at all anymore without having an atheist group come, most of the time from out of state, to protest what's
That's
going
right.
on. And you've probably heard the case about the kid. He was trying to read his Bible at free time in school, and the teacher said, you can't do that. It started this whole nationwide debate about the right of children to read Bible during free time in schools. You have cases of children wearing crosses to schools, and they're being told you have to tuck that under your sweater. That's something that when you're a parent, you really need to watch out for issues like that.
What did this to us, Cheryl? Was it technology? Did it just get too good, just too fast?
No, because if it was just the technology, that would be easy enough to overturn. You could just get rid of the technology. It's the mindset of our nation. It's, you know, we've changed. You know yourself, it's not the same nation it was 20 years ago. It's changed considerably, and not for the better in that many respects. You know, and I'm not talking about the economy or what our 401ks look like or any of that. I'm talking about the underlying tone of this nation, where it seems like you can't even speak out on an issue without somebody pointing to you and either calling you racist or, you know, I can't think of any other term besides racist, but they point at you and they call you names for just speaking common sense now. And everything's been flipped on its head. What used to be taken for the given, the constitutional founding father intent, is now considered radical.
Well, it sure is. There's no doubt about that. You have written a lot about executive orders. Executive orders, of course, giving the president the leeway to simply bypass Congress to get something done. Is that being abused? Any specific president do it more than the others?
Well, I think the guy that bragged about having a pen and a phone who needs Congress, that would be Obama. I think that's pretty egregious. You know, the whole notion of executive orders, way back, they were basically a way for the president to issue to his, you know, cabinet-level officials, hey, give me a report on how things are going. They morphed through the years to become ways that presidents did skirts around Congress to push through personal agendas that the American people didn't want, and that the president couldn't get passed through Congress. I think President Obama has gone above and beyond, not just in some of the executive orders he's issued, things on climate change, the environment, and so forth, but also with the attitude. He's done it with such arrogance and with such a cavalier attitude to the Constitution that it's just really egregious to watch how he governs.
So that's disappointing. And is it an abuse? I mean, can anybody stop these executive orders?
Well, Congress could. Congress could overturn them. I don't know why Congress never does. They never take it on themselves to overturn executive orders.
I'm not even sure they read them to know that they've been acted upon.
Yeah, Congress could have some say in this. They rarely, if ever, do.
So there's got to be another reason behind all of this, too, Cheryl. There's something afoot. Maybe we see it. Maybe we don't. But I mean, there's something they need to accomplish. Is this the work of the Illuminati, the One World Order folks? What is this?
You know, I've heard stuff like that, too, that this is all bringing us toward the One World Order, and this is all designed by a few powerful players from different nations and so forth. I can't say with any certainty that that's what's going on. In my view, I only look at it from what's going on in our nation, and I see that our nation is turning from God, and it's turning toward government for all the provisions, things that used to be left in the hands of the family to provide or local levels of government. We're all turning toward Capitol Hill, toward Congress, and, you know, the president, come save us and provide for us.
Are we truly free, or is that our perception?
A lot of our freedoms have been chipped away. I mean, look at your private property rights right now. I have a chapter on zoning and permitting and homeowners associations and so forth. And, you know, when you buy a piece of property, it used to be that you own that property. You could do with it what you wanted. Now, pretty much, you have to get permission, depending on where you live, from the local zoning people or the local board of supervisors to give you permission to put a shed in your backyard. Sometimes, depending if you live in a historic district or not, you can't change your roof without getting permission first. And then you probably have to go back to the original material, which is more expensive because they don't even make it anymore. You can't pave your driveway without getting, you know, paying $500 for a permit. I mean, this is stuff that happens every day to Americans trying to, you know, improve their homes. It's just, you know, to me, that seems like a government run amok.
Yet some of the laws I think are worthwhile to prevent, for example, that homeowner from putting up some horrible thing in front of his front lawn, for example, you know, a body hanging from a tree or something like that. We're hold on, Cheryl. Let's get into that and so much more when we come back. Plus, we'll open up the phone lines, and if there are any police officers out there that agree with her or don't, why don't you check in with us, too, between what you're doing on duty, of course.